That summer in Oregon, I was itching to escape the monotony of Pendleton, where the dry heat and endless shifts at the coffee shop had me feeling like a hamster on a wheel. I was 23, restless, and craving something real. Something to shake me out of my funk. So, when Mom, who lived clear across the state in Eugene, suggested I come spend a few weeks with her, I jumped at the chance. She was the kind of woman who could make a grocery run feel like an adventure, always chasing the next trail or sunset. "Pack light," she told me over the phone, her voice bright with that familiar spark. "We're gonna live a little." I tossed some clothes and headed west, the promise of her wild spirit pulling me like a magnet. Mom's always been the outdoorsy type, 52 and still outpacing me on hikes. Divorced from Dad for a decade, she turned her life into a love letter to nature. Yoga at dawn, trail runs, volunteering at the wildlife refuge. "Life's too short to stay cooped up, honey," she'd say, her curls bouncing as she packed her Jeep. Me, I'm more of a city girl. Or at least I'd like to think so, but her enthusiasm's infectious. Our mother-daughter trips were sacred. Bug spray, bad singing and all. That weekend, she had her heart set on the coast. "It's just an hour's drive," she said over breakfast, pouring me her killer black coffee. "There's this free campsite up in the foothills near Lincoln City. No crowds, no hassle. Just us and the ocean." "Sounds amazing," I said, munching toast. "But, like, is it safe? Just us two?" She laughed, waving it off. "I've camped there alone before. It's fine. We've got this." Famous last words. We packed her Jeep with the tent, sleeping bags, a cooler of sandwiches and beer, and her trusty camp stove. The drive was a dream, twisting through the Siuslaw National Forest, air turning salty as we neared the Pacific. We cranked Fleetwood Mac, screaming, "Go your own way," with the windows down, hair flying. By afternoon, we reached the campsite, high on a foothill overlooking the coastal mountains. It was remote. No bathrooms, no water, just a dirt pullout with a fire ring and a killer view of the ocean. We were the only ones there. "Jackpot!" Mom whooped, stretching. "This is all ours!" We set up like a well-oiled machine. I pitched the tent, she gathered firewood. The sunset was unreal. Waves crashing far below, sky blazing gold. We hiked a short trail, Mom pointing out deer tracks and lupine. "Look at these," she said, crouching. "Reminds me of you picking flowers as a kid." "Until I grabbed poison ivy," I shot back, grinning. "Lesson learned," she chuckled. "Know your plants." Back at camp, we grilled hot dogs and s'mores, cracking open IPAs. "To new adventures," Mom toasted, clinking her bottle against mine. "To not getting mauled by bears," I added. The evening was perfect. Stars bright, fire crackling. We talked about my jerk ex, her latest date with a vegan guy who hated her cheese obsession. "He lectured me on cheddar," she groaned. "Cheddar!" "Men," I sighed. "Why are they always so weird?" "Not all," she said quietly. "Your dad was good." We were laughing when a truck's rumble interrupted us with three guys inside. They parked nearby, hopped out. Rough types, logging town vibes. The tallest one, gut straining his shirt, waved.
"Hey, you ladies alone up here?"
Mom stood, casual but sharp. "Just for the night. Nice spot, right?"
"Yeah, we fish around here sometimes," he said, eyeing our camp.
His buddies lingered, one lighting a cigarette.
"Seen anyone else?"
"Nope, just us," Mom said. "Why?" The smoker grinned.
"Bear's been active. You got protection?"
My stomach twisted, but Mom just smiled.
"We're good. Bear spray and all."
They talked a bit. Weather. Local beaches. I stayed by the fire, poking embers, heart racing. Something felt wrong. The way they scanned our Jeep. Our stuff. Finally, the tall one nodded.
"Stay safe, ladies."
"You too," Mom said.
They drove off, taillights fading. What was that? I asked.
Probably just locals, she said, but her eyes were sharp. Don't worry.
I did, though. As we zipped into the tent, the unease lingered. The night was black. No moon, just waves and owls. We whispered goodnights, and I drifted off. Around 2 a.m., I woke. Mom was sitting up, rigid. Her gasp had roused me. I'm a light sleeper, always have been. Mom, I started, but she clapped her hand over my mouth, eyes wide. Shh, she whispered. Silence. Then crunch. Footsteps right by the tent, slow, circling. The zipper flap twitched, like someone was touching it. My heart stopped. Those guys? Someone else? We were miles from help. No signal. I grabbed Mom's arm, shaking. She didn't flinch. In a loud, steady voice, she shouted, John, grab the gun! John. Dad's name. But Dad was in Idaho, nowhere near us. It was just us. Two women in a flimsy tent. The footsteps stopped. A shuffle. Whispers. Then an engine roared, tires peeling out. We sat frozen, hearts pounding. You okay? Mom whispered finally. Yeah, I lied, trembling. What the fuck? I don't know, she said, but they're gone. We didn't sleep. At dawn, we packed fast. No breakfast. The drive down that hill felt like forever. We should have had a real gun, I muttered. Mom glanced over, pale but fierce. Next time, maybe. But we handled it. Back in Eugene, we crashed on her couch, coffee in hand, rehashing it. You were a badass, I told her. That John line? Epic. She smirked. True crime binges for the win. But seriously, we gotta be careful. Too many creeps out there. I remember the day my grandparents closed on that old Victorian house in rural Ohio like it was yesterday. It was 1965, and with eight kids under one roof, space was a premium. Grandpa, a burly factory worker with calloused hands and a no-nonsense attitude, spotted the listing in the newspaper. This place has potential, he grunted, folding the ad into his pocket. Grandma nodded, her eyes tired but hopeful. They bought it cheap. Too cheap, looking back, because the previous owners had skedaddled without much explanation. Downstairs was cozy enough, with a big kitchen where Grandma baked apple pies that smelled like heaven. But upstairs? That was a different story. The bedrooms were cramped, and Grandpa decided to renovate right away. We need more room for you rascals, he told us grandkids one weekend when we were visiting. He grabbed his sledgehammer and went at what looked like a flimsy partition wall in the hallway.
Wait, Dad, is that safe?
My mom asked, peeking up the stairs with a frown. She was in her 20s then, still living at home, helping with the younger siblings. Grandpa laughed it off.
Ha ha! It's just drywall. Watch this.
One swing, the wall crumbled. Dust billowed out like smoke from a fire. Behind it wasn't insulation or studs. It was a hidden alcove, stuffed with women's clothes. Dresses from the 40s, maybe earlier. Silk stockings tangled up. A pair of heels kicked off haphazardly. It looked like whoever owned them had dashed out in a panic, leaving everything behind. What the hell? Grandpa muttered, stepping back. The family crowded around. My uncles joked about it.
Maybe she ran off with the milkman.
But Mom shivered.
This feels wrong. Like we're intruding on something private.
They cleared it out anyway. Grandpa turned the space into an extra closet, and life moved on. But that's when the weirdness started. Mom got the room at the end of the hall. She'd tell me stories over coffee years later, her voice dropping low like she was sharing a secret.
I'd be sitting there reading, and suddenly I'd hear this circling sound, like nails scraping wallpaper, tearing it slow and deliberate, around and around the walls it went.
Did you ever check? I'd ask, wide-eyed. She'd nod.
Of course. I'd jump up, run my hands over the plaster. Nothing. No marks, no holes. But it happened night after night. I started sleeping with the light on.
When Mom finally moved out in 72 to marry Dad, Aunt Linda took over the room. She was the wild one, with her bell bottoms and Janis Joplin records. But even she couldn't shake it. One morning I woke up gasping, she confessed to me at a family reunion, wine glass in hand. That picture of the beach I hung up, it was lying right on my chest, like someone placed it there while I slept, for aim and all. I screamed bloody murder. Was it the wind? A draft? I pressed, though I knew better. Aunt Linda shook her head, her eyes distant. No windows open. Door locked. Happened 3 times before I switched rooms. I told your grandma, but she just said, "How's his settle, honey? Don't let your imagination run wild." My cousins had their tales, too. The twins, Sarah and Emily, shared a room across the hall.
"We'd hear footsteps at 2 a.m., Sarah whispered to me once during a sleepover when we were teens. Thump, thump, up the stairs. They'd stop right outside our door. We'd huddle under the covers, hearts pounding. And then?
Emily chimed in, her voice trembling even years later.
Nothing. No one there when we peeked. But the air, it got so cold, like winter in July.
I never liked going upstairs. Even as a kid, I'd make excuses. "I forgot something downstairs," to avoid it. The chill hit you halfway up, seeping into your bones. Weird vibes, like eyes watching from the shadows. As an adult, it got worse. I'd visit for holidays, force myself up to grab a blanket or use the bathroom, and feel this pressure, like the house was breathing down my neck. The dreams started in my 30s. Vivid, terrifying ones where I'd be trapped upstairs, doors slamming shut, that scraping sound echoing. In one, I saw her, a woman in those old dresses, face pale and furious, whispering, "Get out!" I'd wake up sweating, heart racing. "Babe, it's just stress," my husband would say, pulling me close. But I knew it wasn't. Last year, after Grandpa passed, we cleared the house to sell. In the attic, buried under boxes, we found a newspaper clipping from 1943. "Local woman vanishes amid scandal," it read. Her husband, a jealous type, accused her of cheating. Neighbors heard screams, but no body was found. The article mentioned a hidden room where she supposedly stashed her things. "Mom, do you think..." I asked, showing her the yellowed paper. She sighed, tears welling.
"Maybe she never left. Maybe she's been trying to tell us all along."
We held a little ceremony, sage burning, prayers from a local medium. "If you're here, we're sorry," Aunt Linda said aloud, voice steady. "Rest now." The house sold quick after that. No more dreams for me.
I was lying in bed, exhausted from a long shift at the coffee shop in downtown Seattle, where I'd been pulling doubles to pay off my student loans. The whispers started faint, like wind rustling through leaves, but they grew clearer. "Come to the water." I sat up, my heart pounding, scanning my dark apartment. Nothing. No one. I chalked it up to stress. Maybe the breakup with Mark was messing with my head more than I thought. But that night, I woke up on the bathroom floor, the tub overflowing, water soaking through my nightgown. My feet were pruned, like I'd been standing in it for hours. "What the hell?" I muttered to myself, shutting off the faucet with shaking hands. I stared at my reflection in the mirror, my brown eyes wide and scared. At 28, I felt like I was losing it. Sleepwalking? I'd never done that before. The next morning, I called my best friend, Emily. We'd been roommates in college, thick as thieves through all the drama. "Jess, that's creepy as f***," she said over the phone, her voice laced with concern. "You need to see someone, like a doctor or something." "I know, Em, but what if it's just, I don't know, anxiety? Work's been brutal." "No excuses. Promise me you'll go." I promised, and I did. Dr. Harlan was a middle-aged guy with a beard that screamed, "Trust me, I'm wise," in a stuffy office overlooking Puget Sound. I spilled everything, the whispers, the sleepwalking, how I'd waken up with wet feet and a pounding headache. "Sounds like parasomnia, possibly linked with repressed trauma," he said, scribbling notes. "We'll start with cognitive behavioral therapy and maybe some meds to help you sleep deeper." "Repressed trauma? Like what?" I asked, fidgeting with my necklace, a silver locket from my mom. He leaned back. "Could be anything. Childhood stuff, relationships. We'll dig in." Sessions dragged on for weeks. I talked to my parents' divorce when I was 12, how Dad left for some woman in California, leaving Mom to raise me and my sister in a crappy suburb outside Tacoma. Or maybe the pressure of being the responsible one in college, always holding down jobs when my friends partied. But the whispers didn't stop. They'd come at night, pulling me towards the water. Once to the kitchen sink, another time to the shower. I installed locks on the bathroom door, but I'd find them unlocked in the morning. One session I broke down. "It's getting worse, Doc. Last night I dreamt I was drowning, and a voice said, 'You owe me.' What does that even mean?" Dr. Harlan nodded sympathetically. "Guilt manifests in strange ways, Jessica. Let's explore your past relationships more." But nothing clicked. Emily dragged me out for drinks to de-stress, as she put it. "You looking rough, girl," she said, sliding me a margarita. "Tell me what's really going on." I sighed, stirring the salt rim. "It's like something's calling me, Em, pulling me to water. And sleepwalking, I'm scared I might hurt myself." She grabbed my hand. "Remember in college when we had that phase with the Ouija boards? Maybe it's some ghost shit," she laughed, but her eyes were serious. "Don't joke. This feels real." That night, I went to bed early, popped an Ambien Dr. Harlan prescribed, and blacked out. When I came to, cold water lapped at my waist. I was standing in a lake. Lake Washington, I had realized later. Moonlight glinting off the dark surface, frogs croaking, and the air smelled like algae and mud. My pajamas clung to me, and my feet sank into the silt. "Oh God, oh God," I whispered, panic surging. "How did I get here? My apartment was miles away." I waded out, shivering, legs numb. No phone, no keys. I flagged down a car on the road, a middle-aged couple who looked at me like I was a junkie. "Please, I need help," I begged. "I don't know how I got here." The woman wrapped me in a blanket from their trunk. "Honey, are you okay? Should we call the police?" "No, just take me home, please." They did, eyeing me warily. Back in the apartment, I collapsed on the couch sobbing. The whispers echoed in my head. "Come to the water." What the f*** was happening to me? The next morning, sunlight streamed through the blinds, mocking my exhaustion. I couldn't ignore it anymore. I called in sick to work and drove back to the lake, heart racing. The spot where I'd woken up was quiet. I walked to the shore, searching for something, anything. That's when I saw it, an old boarded-up building, half hidden by overgrown weeds. The lakeside grill, the faded sign read. Memories flooded back. College junior year at UW. Me and our crew, Sarah, who was always the wild one, had met a guy at a frat party. We were broke, drunk on cheap beer, and decided to hit this little restaurant on the lake for a little late-night bite. Burgers, fries, and milkshakes. But when the bill came, Sarah whispered, "Let's dash. Who's with me?" I hesitated. "Guys, that's shitty. The owner's right there." Come on, Jess, Emily giggled. Live a little. It's just once. The owner was an older man, maybe in his 50s, with a limping, kind smile. He chatted with us about the Huskies game, but peer pressure won. We bolted, laughing like idiots, piling into Sarah's car. He chased us. I saw him in the rear view yelling, "Hey, stop!" running towards the lake path, trying to cut us off. And then, a splash. We didn't stop. We didn't look back. The next day was on the campus paper. Local resident owner drowns in Lake Washington after apparent fall. Heart attack, they said. But we knew. We never talked about it. Swore each other to silence. Sarah moved to New York after graduation, and Emily got married, and I buried it deep. Standing there now, staring at the abandoned grill, guilt crashed over me like a wave. And the whispers, they were his, urging me to the water where he died. I sank to my knees in the dirt. "I'm sorry," I whispered to the empty air. "I'm so sorry." I called Emily. "Em, we need to talk about that night. The restaurant." Silence on the line. Then, "Jess, what? Why bring that up now?" "Because it's haunting me. Literally, I think. I think his ghost or something is making me go to the lake. You're scaring me. That was ages ago." She hung up, but I couldn't let it go. The next day, I drove to the police station in Bellevue, and the desk sergeant, a burly guy with a mustache, looked up from his paperwork. "Can I help you, ma'am?" I took a deep breath. "I need to report a crime from years ago. A dine and dash that led to a death." He raised an eyebrow. "All right, let's get a statement." I sat in a cold interrogation room, spilling it all. The laughter, the chase, the splash we ignored. Tears streamed down my face. We didn't mean for him to die as we ran, but now it feels like he's calling me back. The detective, a woman named Ramirez, listened patiently. "Statute of limitations on theft is up, but if it's connected to manslaughter, we'll look into it. You did the right thing coming forward." "Did I? It feels too late." She touched my arm. "Guilt eats you alive, honey, but better late than never." They questioned Emily and tracked down Sarah, who broke down over the phone from her Brooklyn apartment. The police reopened the case as an accident, but with our confessions, it brought closure to the owner's family. His daughter, now in her 40s, reached out. We met at a coffee shop. Ironic, I know. "You don't know how much this means to me," she said, eyes misty. "Dad's death always felt unfinished. Knowing what happened, it helps." "I'm so sorry. We were stupid college kids," I said. She nodded. Forgiveness isn't easy, but holding on hurts more.
I'd driven out to this remote valley in the Pacific Northwest, craving some alone time after a brutal breakup. No cell service, no distractions, just me, my truck, and the wilderness. I'm a 25-year-old graphic designer from Seattle, the kind of woman who's always been independent, but yeah, solo camping as a female can make you hyper-aware of every rustle in the bushes. I'd hiked longer than planned that day, pushing myself on a trail that wound through dense pines and along a rushing river. As dusk fell, I ran into this local guy, mid-30s, friendly smile, wearing worn hiking boots. "Hey, you look like you're about to get caught in the dark," he said, eyeing my backpack. "Yeah, I lost track of time," I admitted, laughing it off. "Any spots nearby to camp?" He nodded. "There's a hidden one just off the road by the river, camouflaged from the highway, perfect for privacy." He sketched a quick map on a scrap of paper from his pocket. "Stay safe out there." "Thanks, man, appreciate it." I shook his hand and headed off, feeling that little buzz of adventure. The spot was gold, tucked behind a thicket of ferns, with the river murmuring like white noise. It was already pitch black by the time I got there, so instead of pitching my tent, I opted for laziness. I climbed into the back of my truck under the topper, surrounded by my gear, cooler, sleeping bag, a stash of IPAs. I built a roaring fire, cracked a beer, and blasted my friend Dakota's comedy podcast on my portable speaker. She was riffing on bad dates and empowered single life, stuff that had me cackling out loud. "Girl, if he can't handle your sass, he's not worth the ass." Dakota's voice boomed, and I toasted the flames with my can. I was loud, visible, flames flickering high. Part of me knew it wasn't the smartest, but hell, I felt invincible that night. Sleep came easy, lulled by the river and the beer buzz. Morning hit with crisp air and birdsong. I stirred around 7 a.m., hopped out, and started another fire. Cracked another beer. Why not? It was vacation. I was frying eggs and bacon on my camp stove when I sensed it. Movement at the edge of the clearing. There he was. A man, shuffling closer but never meeting my eyes. He looked rough, like he'd been out here for months. Long, ratty beard tangled with twigs, clothes layered in filth, and goddamn, at least 10 plastic grocery bags tied all over him, rustling like some messed up wind chime. My stomach twisted. "Morning. Beautiful day, huh?" I called out, trying to sound casual. Nothing. No nod, no grunt. He just paced the perimeter, eyes darting at my gear, my truck, everything but me. "You hungry? I've got some extra breakfast here. Eggs? Bacon?" I offered, forcing a smile. Still nothing. He muttered something under his breath, too low to catch, then turned his back, wandering like he owned the place. "Want a beer? It's early, but what the hell?" I tried again, grabbing one from the cooler. He froze, back still to me. That's when the creep factor hit full throttle. Was he watching me last night? Had he been lurking while I laughed at podcasts and drank by the fire? I glanced at my bear spray and buck knife tucked right by the stove. "Listen, dude," I said louder, "you're either going to acknowledge me or get the hell out of here right now." He ignored me, shuffling closer to my truck. "Motherfucker, I said acknowledge me or leave," I shouted, grabbing the bear mace. I took a few steps toward him, canister raised. "I'm not playing." He sulked away then, bags crinkling as he vanished into the underbrush. No words, no fight, just gone. I didn't wait. Threw my sh** into the truck, half-cooked breakfast, gear tumbling, and peeled out of there, heart slamming against my ribs. Drove straight to the nearest town, found a diner, and chugged coffee while replaying it all. Looking back, I thank my lazy ass for sleeping in the truck. A tent? He'd have been right on me. That nice local probably saved me by suggesting the spot, but who knows if the creepy guy had been watching from afar.
My boyfriend Joey took me to a really nice Italian restaurant. He'd gotten us reservations for 8, and we arrived right on time. The waitress took us to a table in the back of the restaurant. We sat in a dark corner, and the candle on the table made everything seem so romantic. Joey told me to pick any food that I wanted. Money was no object. Joey kept smiling at me, and I could tell that he had a big surprise planned. We'd been dating for 3 years, so the only thing that I could think of was proposal. I knew that if he proposed, I would say yes. I'd probably burst into tears, too. I loved him that much. The restaurant was busy, but I felt like Joey and I were the only two people in the world. God, he was so handsome. When the waiter came back, I ordered a pretty large meal, and Joey asked for a salad. I thought that was strange. Joey loved to eat. I guess he could see the confused look on my face, because he explained, "I'm too nervous to eat a lot." "Why are you nervous?" I asked coyly. He said, "Because I'm about to ask you something important." My heart fluttered. This was it. He was going to propose. "Go ahead," I told him. "Okay, do you see that man over there?" he asked. He nodded toward another table, where an extremely ugly old man sat by himself eating breadsticks. This was not how I was expecting things to go. Yeah. "His name is Reginald," Joey said, and I showed him your picture. He seemed very impressed. "By my picture?" I asked.
He thinks you're beautiful, and he'd like to get to know you better. What? I screamed. Joey took a deep breath, and his smile disappeared. I realized that it wasn't an excited smile. It was a nervous smile. Very slowly, he explained that he had converted all of his savings into some meme coin digital currency without telling me. He lost everything. I was furious. Joey had already gotten burned in his get-rich-quick schemes before. But to think that he lost thousands of dollars? And what does that have to do with Reginald? I asked. Joey explained that he figured out a way to earn everything back on the dark web. His friend showed him an auction site where anonymous people would place bids on everything. He didn't have anything valuable to sell, except me. Are you trying to sell me to that creep? I asked. I took a long drink of my champagne. Just for the night, Joey said. But you have to agree to whatever he wants. And when you come back in the morning, he'll transfer $25,000 into our savings account. I wanted to punch Joey in the face. I couldn't believe he would do this. No, I said. Joey, we're done. It's over. I threw down my napkin and got out of my chair. Joey didn't stop me. I expected him to say something, but he just watched me leave. When I reached to the door, I looked over my shoulder one last time at my boyfriend. I caught him giving a little thumbs up to Reginald across the room. I took an Uber back home and packed up all my stuff just to get out of there. I knew I couldn't take everything with me, but I didn't feel safe staying here another night. I filled a briefcase with my essentials and waited at the front door for my sister, Lainey, to pick me up. I was going to stay with her until I could find a space of my own. Lainey said that she'd be there in 10 minutes, and I prayed that Joey wouldn't come back until after I was gone. Eventually, I saw Lainey park her blue Nissan in front of the house. I was about to run outside, but I realized that I'd forgotten my toothbrush in the bathroom. I ran back in to grab it. It took me 30 seconds at most. Then I went outside to meet Lainey, but she wasn't there. Her car was still parked outside, but it was empty. I looked all around my front yard, but there was no sign of my sister, and I started to panic. I pulled out my phone to call the police when I saw something move behind the bushes. I walked closer, hoping that Lainey was there, but instead, I saw Reginald. He followed me back to my house. He had a dirty rag in his hand. He didn't see me, though. He was too busy staring at the ground. I looked through the leaves and saw my sister's body lying at his feet. He must have chloroformed her. I know I should have called 911, but I wasn't thinking straight. I was both angry and terrified. Without realizing what I was doing, I walked closer to Reginald. "Get away from her," I said. He turned to me and smiled. "I won't hurt her," he whispered, his voice surprisingly high. A little weird baby doll voice coming out of a grizzled old man. "The deal was for you, and on the web, all deals are final." And with that, he ran toward me. I tried to run back toward the house and lock myself inside, but he was too fast. He grabbed me by the arm and spun me around to face him. He was still holding a chloroform-coated rag. "Wait!" I screamed. I knew I couldn't fight back, but maybe I could reason with him. "All deals are final," he repeated, raising the rag to my mouth. "Stop. What was the deal? What was the deal?" "I get you for one night," he said. $25,000, and I can do whatever I want, as long as I don't leave any lasting damage.
"Why me?"
"Why not you?" he said. I could smell the chemical coming off of the rag as he pushed it towards my face. I knew that if I took a single breath, I'd instantly lose consciousness. So I held my breath and kept my mouth shut. I couldn't hold my breath forever, though. I closed my eyes and pretended to pass out. He loosened his grip on me, which gave me the opportunity to twist out of his hands. Now that the rag was no longer pressed against my face, I shouted, "New deal!" He froze, intrigued. "Take Joey instead," I offered. "But I want you," 10,000 for Joey, and you can leave as much lasting damage as you want. That's a better deal, right? He considered my offer. Then he reached out his hand. For a horrible moment, I thought he was going to attack me again, but instead, he reached out to shake my hand. We did, and then he wordlessly walked inside the house. I went straight to Lainey. She was completely unconscious, just a little woozy, but I helped her get into the car and drove us back to her place. As we were driving away, we passed Joey driving back to the house. I saw him for just a second through the car windows, but thankfully he didn't see me. That was the last time I ever saw my boyfriend. He's been missing ever since. And the next morning, $10,000 was transferred into my account.